Hello, everyone. Cool cubs and bears. Did I mess that up again? I think I did. Anyway,
it should
welcome
be
back to
bears and cubs because it's cats and kittens.
Cool bears and cubs. Anyway, welcome to episode 4, season 2 of Sour Grapes with Amy and Etta. I am Amy.
And I'm Etta.
She's Etta.
We still don't have our ducks
welcome
in a
to
row.
Our weekly therapy session, during which time we spend an hour before we hit record, catching up on life, whining about various things, and deciding what all we're going to snark on this week. And then we go into this completely blind, and we are still surprised by what we end up talking about at the end of the day. Anyway, Etta, what are you drinking tonight?
Tonight, I am drinking a Cote du Rhône. I'm getting fancy.
So you don't have to murder John.
I don't.
And I did not get you Chardonnay.
I did. I told my husband that if he brought home Chardonnay, that I would haunt him from the grave.
Oh, so, it was haunting, not murdering.
Yeah,
that's
I wasn't
going to
murder
dangerous.
Him. I was just going to haunt him in the future. So
who kills him in this scenario?
I mean, I just kind of always assume that some sort of a crazy accident takes him out. So that way I'm always mentally prepared for the inevitable.
Mentally prepared and mentally anticipating it. So it robs you of all your joy at all times.
I try not to let it rob
me
of the joy.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Every time a policeman drives into my street and I see them turn around in the cul-de-sac, I'm convinced that they are coming to tell me that Todd has died in a car accident. It's very healthy of me. Anyway,
what you drinking?
So college. Oh, I'm having my favorite Malbec, a Solar del Alma Malbec that I break out on fancy occasions. And the first loss of the Dave Aranda era felt like a fancy occasion.
Hey, if today's not fancy, I don't know what is.
I mean, I think it also just felt like I should find joy wherever I can find it, because this weekend...
Treat yourself,
because I've been living in a quarantine for 6 months or something. I don't know.
It's been 195 days since March 24th, so...
And that's the first day you made your children jump into the pool?
That is the first day I made my children jump into the frigid pool. So
it's been 200 days,
yeah,
of this madness at least. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to treat myself whenever I can.
I think you should.
So last week we somehow got on the topic of conspiracy theories because you were talking about one of your field trips. That sounds pejorative and you're a child, but it was a trip out to the field to study.
For field work. Right.
And you encountered people who thought that there were
Yeah, they thought there were chemical weapons in the bottom of Carlsbad Caverns, which apparently there were at one point. We have an official fact checker for the podcast now who informed us that at one point there actually were chemical weapons or some sort of arms storage at Carlsbad Caverns. So the old toothless guys were not entirely wrong. I'm really sorry, gentlemen.
I know.
For doubting you.
They are not listening to right now. But I am very appreciative for our fact checker.
I know.
And I still have no idea how we got on that topic. But Friday night, we sent out an SOS for Baylor Twitter's favorite conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And I feel like we struck gold.
Y'all have some really great conspiracy theories.
Okay, so I want to approach this in two different parts.
Okay.
First, I want to hear your personal favorite conspiracy theory, and then I want to hear the funniest one that you saw on Twitter Friday night.
So as a Colorado native, my personal favorite conspiracy theory is that the Denver International Airport is actually a bunker for the New World Order in the case of the entire breakdown of society and Armageddon. I have heard this for years, And
I'm when not, was that airport built?
The mid-90s, I want to say. Maybe 96-ish. I did research this earlier. Okay, it opened to the public on February 28th, 1995. It was $2 billion with a B over budget, which I actually think is about a doubling of its budget. I think it was supposed to be a $2 billion project, and it ended up being $4 billion. And the crazy thing is, at the time, Denver had a fully functioning airport. I mean, I don't remember it amazingly because I was 10, but I mean, it was close to the middle of town. There wasn't really anything super wrong with it, I don't think, other than that it was in the middle of town and a little landlocked probably, but not necessarily we need a $4 billion airport.
Right.
So there's all these things like, you know, they built these massive buildings and then buried them. So those are like fallout shelters, and there's all this crazy artwork there's one that has this guy in like a gas mask with like a Grim Reaper. Is it a sickle or a scythe? I don't know. A sickle?
I think a scythe, right?
There is a difference, but I don't know what it is. So if you are an expert on farm implements, let us know. but, you know, there's just like really creepy artwork, and there's some sort of Freemason history that's involved, and there's this creepy horse it might have a real name.
The laser eyes.
Yeah, right? It's bright blue, and it has these red electronic eyes. So if you're there at night, it has these like glowing demon eyes. His name is Blucifer. I mean, he's blue and he looks demon possessed, so he's Blucifer. But he killed his sculptor while he was being created. He fell and crushed the artist. Like, there's all these conspiracy theories, and Denver has, the airport has really leaned into it. So they're doing all these renovations right now, and they have these big banners up all over covering it that say like, don't mind us, just making room for new bunkers, stuff like that.
Okay, so they're like, I flew into the Denver airport like last year, year ago, and I swear that I saw those.
You did, because they were definitely there last summer. I haven't flown into Denver in maybe, let's call it 10 months. Who knows? Maybe Christmas time. But they were definitely there when y'all were there on your trip. So, yeah, that's my favorite. It's just so fun.
I really appreciate it when the people like have the sense of humor to lean into it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you think like, are they leaning into this because it's funny, or are they leaning into this because it further throws us off their scent? Because surely if it were true, they would not be leaning into this.
What if it's both? See, so, yeah, that's like the best conspiracy theories are absolutely a little bit believable.
It is very fun, but I don't think that I realized that the conspiracy theory was that like it was being set up as an end of days type bunker deal.
Yeah, I think that's what the buried buildings allegedly are. I mean, in my head, it's just there's like 7 million miles of underground trains at DIA. So I just assumed that the buildings were like train tunnels and things. But yeah,
I feel like I need to read up on this.
I will send you a link.
A good book.
There's a really good, I think it's Thrillist, but it could also be, there's a Denver group called Westward, or a Denver blog called Westward. It also could be that. So I will find it and send it to you. It's very good. So what is your favorite conspiracy theory?
Is this your personal one or your funniest one? Or is
no, that's my
one and the same?
That's my personal one. I will go find the replies to us and see what my funniest one is. But I want to know what your personal favorite.
So my personal one is born of personal experience, which is that I think that there is like a hardcore big chapstick cabal, and that chapstick has really been created to make our lips more dry so that we keep buying chapstick because it's like a momentary relief provided.
Yeah.
And then we are just continuing, because I can go months and months without any need to apply any kind of lubrication to my mouth, and Someone is going to make a dirty joke out of this. But
the more you're mentioning this, the more I'm like, my lips are really dry.
And then suddenly I will have something pop up. And it usually is as winter is approaching and the air is getting a little bit more dry. And so I will find a chapstick in my house that hasn't been stolen by my daughter and like drawn on the walls with. And I will put it on, and then inevitably it begins a cycle of me just constantly like needing to do something to my face when I have not needed to do anything. Maybe also, now that I'm saying this, maybe it's because the air becomes less humid or. But I'm clinging to this idea that it's just a farce. And I, from this moment on, I refuse to buy chapstick, and I'm going to do the aquifer that you suggested.
That's my personal favorite.
Coconut oil has been good too.
Yeah. I don't know. There's also an oil that I think it originally comes from like whales or something, but
like whale fat.
I think it's called squalane. I use it for wrinkle prevention. But
for what?
Wrinkle prevention. But it's a compound that I think originally came from like whale fat or something like that. But there's also a plant derived version of it, and that's what I use. But I think they make a chapstick version, so I will find send it to you.
I guarantee you they're hooked up with that cabal.
They might be
somehow.
But you know what? If it prevents me from getting that like cigarette lips when I'm older, I'm okay with it.
Oh, I feel like I'm just going to inject neurotoxins into my face eventually.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Same.
Funniest one that you saw on Twitter. So I'm seeing that like Nick said something about the Berenstain Bears versus the Berenstain Bears.
Yeah, this is not, that's not something I've
never
heard
this before ever.
No.
And I did not. There was some wine on Friday night, and I did not further investigate this. But Nick, I have seen your tweet. I'm liking it right now and sending it to myself so that I can further investigate.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that
one. The birds. Do we think it's the birds?
The birds is pretty funny. Like, for those of y'all who are not on Twitter, although I don't know how you would have heard about us.
Who is not on Twitter?
I don't know. I don't know how you would have heard about us if you're not on Twitter. But the suggestion is that birds are not real. All the birds died, and birds are robot spies. Is that right?
Something
like that. There was one, I'm trying to find it, that I had not heard of. And that's the one I'm trying to find, because I really enjoyed
the Avril Lavigne one.
No, I had heard that one, that Avril Lavigne died sometime like maybe like 2017-ish or something, and a doppelganger has been impersonating her.
Was that when she was dating Brody Jenner?
She was dating Brody Jenner.
I don't know when it was that she was dating him, but, like, this would further fall into my, like, the Kardashians steal the soul and the life of everyone they touch and, like, become stronger, like a Dorian Gray portrait in someone's attic, like...
Oh, that makes sense.
So, if this was during that period, that era of her life, then I 100% believe that she is dead.
Yeah. So I can't find the one that I had never heard of before, but I think the funniest one to me, because it's sports related and this is allegedly a sports podcast, is the Ann Richards.
Texas is back.
Ann Richards got Baylor into the Big 12. I like that one personally because I feel like other fan bases throw that back at us all the time. Like, oh, well, y'all are only in the Big 12 because of Ann Richards. Like, so even if that is true, who cares?
I like the idea of a kind of liberal woman just like taking the opportunity to stick it to a bunch of old, powerful white men a little bit.
I do too.
If that's what happened. I'm good with that. But I also thought you were going to go with the whole Texas is back conspiracy.
That one is really funny.
I feel like that will get us nicely into our next topic of conversation, which is the fact that we had our second week of Big 12 football. And if you are anything other than like a TCU Horned Frog right now, if you live in Texas and are a football fan of a team in Texas, it was not a great weekend.
This is true.
Texas is not back, by the way. But I think that my favorite stat is that since joining the Big 12, Gary Patterson has beat Texas like 7 of 9 outings.
Yeah. Yeah. Texas is 2-7 against TCU since they joined the Big 12.
I don't like they have had TCU, I'm talking about, has had some like astoundingly bad years of football since joining. And of course, Todd's favorite statistic is about how average Gary is as a coach. But my goodness, they beat Texas on the regular. And Tom Herman had some quote this week about how, like, what does Gary Patterson even do as a coach or something to that effect?
Yeah.
And I think that it was meant to be a compliment, but of course Tom Herman is like a human who is incapable of expressing things in a human way, so it came off as just like really kind of asshole-ish. Yeah. And then Gary goes and beats them.
It was fantastic. I mean, it was...
Did you watch it? Any of it?
I caught the very end of it before I headed to the rehearsal dinner, I think.
Right, because you also traveled to Texas this weekend and then spent most of Saturday morning at a hospital checking on your grandma.
I did. My grandmother fell in her hotel room, and then we had to have hotel maintenance break into the room because she had locked the little flippy thing. And
to be safe.
Yes, to be safe from all those burglars on third floors of hotels in Denton. So, yeah, we had to have maintenance break down her door. So I didn't actually watch almost any football until the evening. Lucky. And then we got to watch the Air Force versus Navy game while we were at the rehearsal dinner.
Well, I didn't watch any of Texas and TCU. I was watching Baylor at the time. And Todd, we have soccer on Saturday mornings, and we have like early games for Sam, and then an hour or so later we have Graham games. So I took Sam right after Graham's game and like sped home to get to watch Baylor and West Virginia. And Todd and Graham went to run a couple of errands because we're also in the middle of a bathroom demolition and reconstruction. And they got home probably like mid fourth quarter of the Baylor West Virginia game, and I'm in a mood and I'm trying to catch him up on this, and he's like blah blah blah, doesn't really seem particularly concerned, it is what it is. And then later in the day, like half an hour later, Texas is losing to TCU and it's not over yet, but like it's almost over, and he's like, this is great, I don't even care about the Baylor score, Texas lost, that's all I care about. And I'm like, my gosh, you are the very worst of humanity, but also, this is why I love you.
I mean, I feel like that's relatable.
Right. And he further expounded on the idea, like, Baylor wasn't going to go to the national championship this year, but Texas went into the season being hyped up, as Texas usually is, and he just derives a lot of joy from others' downfall, which is definitely a character flaw, but... It's my true. Kind of character flaw.
So for me, a good catch up on this Baylor game this weekend was a thread from Nick Pants that was literally just angst.
GIF after GIF.
Yes, of angst over horrible reffing calls, it seemed like. I mean, granted that, you know, take it with a grain of salt because it is a Baylor fan complaining about it. But it seemed like they were pretty booty trash in terms of an officiating crew.
I feel like it was a common theme in like most Big 12 games this weekend that that fans of all teams were angry about the reffing. I really, really, really like. One of my favorite moments of the day was RG3's tweet when Fleeks scored the touchdown that I think tied the game for us. And this was after we had already been screwed out of one touchdown call. But Fleeks got penalized like 15 yards after kickoff for taunting after a touchdown because he did like a flex at the camera or at the empty stands.
And it was a short flex. It was not like it was long not and posing or anything crazy.
I thought that the like the kind of high stepping that he did into the end zone was what we were going to be getting in trouble for, because I think that that can be taunting also.
Yeah.
But RG3 was like,
he said 15 yards for flexing. I guess the head official should get one too. He's been flexing every time he makes a call.
And it's true. And this guy looked like Fred Armisen. He did. He took steroids.
It was like Beef Ref, but with Fred Armisen's head.
And yeah, Beef Ref with like a sweet little face. And then you end up hating him by the time it was over.
It made me mad because I think real Beef Ref is actually a pretty good ref overall. Right. And so I was like, wait, you are tainting the reputation of what it means to be a Beef Ref. You can't do this. Right. This is awful.
It definitely became a rough show. And I feel like every jilted team has some kind of lament that is similar to this. And I'm not going to dismiss the fact that Baylor should have taken care of business in other facets of the game. But when we had the touchdown called back, or no, the touchdown that was never ruled a touchdown, despite like you could clearly see the ball breaking the plane. It was just kind of infuriating because at that point, as a fan, you have given up hope that Baylor is going to be able to make this a game.
Yes.
And then you get a little bit of hope and they just rip it right out of you. And I think from a football norms point of view, like Baylor has that whole take three BU thing right now, and I think McGuire is a big like I think he is the vocal guy about that, but the whole premise is that if you can get three turnovers, if you can force as a defense three turnovers, more often than not you are going to win the game because you will have been setting yourself up in a position to score.
Yeah.
And it was really, really frustrating to see the defense just like swarming all over the field to get two recovered fumbles, two interceptions, and not be able to do anything with that. I wanted to die a little bit, and that's maybe hyperbolic, but...
But the important thing to remember is it's 2020, and the season is meaningless.
The season is meaningless.
Yeah. There's no...
I mean, I wasn't devastated after the game on Saturday. I think I was more shocked that we were somehow in double overtime with a chance to win the game. I definitely was not an Oklahoma or a Texas fan at the end of the day.
Couldn't be me.
Contemplating the end of like Tom Herman's coaching career, Lincoln Riley's coaching career, etc.
I mean, I'll be completely honest that I'm surprised that Tom Herman is still at Texas. I think if he had been Charlie Strong, he would have been gone last year. But that is a different topic for a different day.
Strong was hired in 13, right?
Yes.
Like, right after Mack Brown lost to Baylor in the Big 12 de facto championship game.
I think that's right.
And then he was fired in at the end of 16.
Yes.
So he got 14, 15, 16. He got three seasons. And then Herman has got
17, 18, 19.
Oh, and we're going into 20.
Yeah.
But Herman did, to his credit, get them to the Sugar Bowl 1 year.
That's true.
And we were told Texas was back then. He's also lost to Maryland and TCU. And
did he lose? Was he the coach for both Maryland losses, or was Charlie the coach for one of them?
Oh, yes, he was. He was. I'm pretty sure it was his first year and his second year. Okay, they lost in 18.
I think one of them was maybe a Charlie Strong year, because I think it was the same year that they lost. It wasn't? It wasn't the year they lost to Kansas?
2017 and 2018. Okay. And then they lost to Kansas in 2016.
Yeah. The year of our Lord. People do forget that.
People do forget that they lost. So yeah, Tom came in highly touted as the future of Texas football.
He's in Mensa.
It's just so funny because I remember so vividly how badly Baylor fans wanted Baylor to hire Tom Herman. And of course, Texas got on the ball and got Herman hired before Baylor made any kind of a decision. They basically hired him like right before the end of the year.
And there was that whole debacle where he was briefly going to go to LSU. There was this whole thing where Ed Orgeron didn't know if he was going to continue to be the head coach because he was the interim head coach.
But they did really well under him, correct?
Yeah, they did great under him. And then briefly it was like, oh, you know, Tom Herman is coming from Houston. And then I think within like 24 or 36 hours, it was like, oh, no, he's going to Texas.
Because Texas presumably just completely money whipped him.
Oh, I'm sure.
And that was what I was kind of seeing this weekend from a bunch of like well-connected insiders to the Texas program. It was like, okay, we have had to furlough or flat out fire.
Yeah.
Several people within our athletic department. We are in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
The big money donors are pissed off and unsatisfied, but they're not going to pony up buyout money right now because we have no idea what the climate is going to be.
I haven't seen info on this. I should look this up. But I don't know. Has Texas cut pay for professors and teaching staff as well? Because I know many other universities, including one that we both love, has done that.
I know that they have made cuts in the athletic department, which is especially galling when you consider that they are one of the wealthier departments in the whole country. Yeah. Like, they are top five. But anyway, Texas fans are convinced that Urban Meyer is their next head coach because apparently Urban Meyer speaks in, like, fawning Texas code whenever he talks about them publicly. And he is just chomping at the bit to take that job. And I cannot think of a job that I would less want to take if I am like a legacied, storied coach.
I don't know.
I just want to ride off into the sunset.
I kind of want him to take it solely because he has this habit of like building up programs, doing really well, and then like piecing out on them. I mean, he did it to Florida. Mm-hmm. He sort of, I can't remember the specifics about his departure from Ohio State.
I think that one was premised upon the fact that he was like sick, or was that Florida?
That was Florida. He allegedly had like heart issues of some sort.
The program was about to get in big trouble.
Yeah.
I think. Or going to be hit with some form of like sanctions. I don't know.
Maybe Ohio State. Was he there with all that? Terrell Pryor.
Tattoo gate. Tattoos and jerseys.
Yeah. He might. I can't remember. But it's like he does these things where it's like he brings them promise and makes them happy. And then like he takes it all away. I kind of want that to happen for Texas. Like my little petty heart would love that.
But you have to live through them being really, really good and living up to their promise for a little bit.
But what if I knew that they could be really, really good and then go back to being mediocre?
I would personally rather they just stay mediocre and too big for their britches, but
I mean, that's like, nice I'm always
looking for some entertainment.
That's nice too.
Speaking of entertainment,
yes,
Oklahoma has started the season for the first time since like 1999 losing to two opponents like right out the gate.
Yeah.
Two unranked opponents.
This year's college seniors may not have been born when they were last this bad. I'm trying to remember. So I have a cousin who just graduated in May, and he was born in January of 98. So potentially college seniors right now were not alive last time OU was this bad to start a season.
I mean, I don't want to personally call out people who I know and appreciate in real life. But when I was being all schadenfreude last week when OU lost to Kansas, I was told that OU is still very much so the cream of the crop.
Yeah, the crimson and cream of the crop.
Lost again this week. And I may or may not have a friend in Arlington, Texas, at my church, who is a very big OU fan, who got very angry at my tweet suggesting that OU might have to be relegated and Tulsa takes their spot in the Big 12.
Can you imagine if...
And I would just encourage any OU fan who needs to, like, defend their team's honor every single time a funny negative tweet is made about their team, just step away from Twitter. It's not that personal. It's not that big of a deal.
Like, I will mock my own team. I love them to pieces, but I will make fun of them if there is a funny situation. It's okay.
Right. And then, like, and just the idea, like, I would never feel the need to get into anyone's mentions if they tweeted something about Baylor losing to West Virginia. It's fine. It's not me. It's a team.
There are very few things that I'm willing to pick a Twitter fight over.
There are things that I will fight over.
Oh, yeah. That but none of them are...
Is not one of them.
Petty sports things.
What else about the weekend, Etta? What else stood out for you? What else brought you joy?
One thing that brought me joy was Dean... Is it Straka or Straka? I have no idea. It's one of those names where it's like, I've only ever seen it written. I've never actually heard it pronounced. But he said... Oklahoma and Texas heading to the Cotton Bowl with a combined 1-3 mark in Big 12 play and no state fair. And the attached picture of it is just the giant burning image of Big Tex from when he caught fire a few years back. And I just...
That seems like so long ago.
It does. It was like a lifetime ago, but it just makes me so happy because it is like the perfect image for the Red River rivalry. Wow, that is...
Oh, it's so perfect.
Hard to say quickly. It's just fantastic. It makes me so happy.
We have, I think, tangentially discussed our, like... Oh, yes. Our hierarchy...
Of hatred?
Of football interests here.
Oh, yeah. Rooting interests.
So, like, I'm fully going into this weekend rooting for OU... Because they have already lost twice, and Texas has only lost once.
Right. So if they beat Texas, it looks worse for Texas.
To lose?
I think so. It looks worse for Texas to lose to a two-loss Oklahoma than for Texas just barely beat a two-loss Oklahoma.
And I think that this kind of, like, gets to the heart of the matter. Like, which team... If a gun is to my head and I have to save one program, which one do I hate more?
Oh, Texas.
And it reveals to me that it's definitely Texas.
Yeah. I mean, I would never say that I hate Oklahoma. Would I cheer for them unless I had to? Probably not. I don't hate them. Actually, there are very few things I truly hate in this world. I wouldn't even say hate Texas. Maybe I would. But,
and I don't hate Texas fans. Right. I just hate them, like, as an entity.
I hate the entitlement.
Yeah.
The our poo don't stink, we're better than you mentality. So therefore, I would love to see them sad.
I find myself, like, most every year rooting for Oklahoma in this game. Not rooting so much as, like, rooting for another team's downfall. Which, again, I acknowledge is a huge character flaw. And at some point, maybe when I'm not living in a pandemic and homeschooling and having to be all the things to my family, maybe I will go to counseling for this. But that's not today. That's not this week.
I feel like there's so many other fish to fry at therapy than what team we're rooting against.
Well, right.
You know, like, if I get to the point where I need to talk to my therapist about what team...
My joy shouldn't be dependent upon another's downfall.
Okay, fine.
But
my point is,
I have bigger fish to fry right now.
If I get to the point where I'm talking to my therapist about what teams are playing, I need to stop paying for therapy. That's just,
well, I mean,
that's just throwing away good money.
This is why we exist as a podcast.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
This is my therapy.
Yes.
Every week.
Yeah.
Can we pivot to, is the Big 12 bad this year? Or is Big 12 like evenly talented throughout the league? What do you say?
I say potentially evenly talented, or potentially other leagues just haven't played enough games yet to be exposed, which I kind of feel like is maybe the more likely option. But I don't know. It's so hard to know. I mean, I feel like, you know, Nick Saban's out here like bathing in infant blood or something to like, one, stay young looking. He doesn't age. And two, get all these wins and, you know, have players be willing to gray shirt to be on his team. Like, I'm a 5-star recruit and I'm going to go sit behind some dudes for 2 years so that I can play for Nick Saban. My 2 years might be an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. So I don't know. I just think everybody, this is the great, like I said, the great equalizer, and 2020 is made up and doesn't matter.
I'm very, like, I do feel, speaking of not wanting to get into people's mentions and like feeling the need to like rise up and attack people who attack my honor, I do feel a weird sense of like a need to refute these like claims, like old girl from Barstool made this week, that the Big 12 is an absolute dumpster fire this year. I feel like they say this every year, and I feel like they point to the fact that inevitably OU will make it to a playoff game and get pounded by some huge SEC team. And that is their evidence for the fact that Big 12 just isn't a good conference. But like, there are going to be four teams at the end of the day who make it to a playoff, and there's going to be one team named national championship. And I don't know that that's a good indicator of what makes a good team or not a good team. And I definitely don't think that that is a good indicator of what makes a good league or not a good league. Yeah. I think that the fact that the Big 12 is playing every team every single season, and coaches get to know each other's tendencies, and coaches get to game plan against you know, a common scheme, a common kind of recruit. Like, it just creates insane parity that is not necessarily present in other conferences. And I think that it is just fun. Like, it is fun to go into any game on any Saturday and not know who is going to win. Whereas we go into Alabama versus A&M, and we know that Alabama is going to shellack them most of the time. Sorry, Aggies.
I mean, the SEC West is going to end up almost every year being Bama and everyone else who cannibalized each other. That's just the way it is. That's the way it's been for a long time. And I mean, as much of a LSU fan as I am, it's so much more fun to watch Big 12 games and not know what's going to happen. You know, I don't watch college football because I know what the outcome's going to be. I watch it because I enjoy it. I enjoy the unexpectedness year after year. And I enjoy not knowing. I enjoy watching players develop and seeing what different coaches can do with these kids who they were all going after. And wondering, you know, I wonder what that kid would have done in this system. What would he have done here? And just seeing how they turn out. You know, wondering, how did Kellen Mond not turn out to be amazing? Player development, maybe. Sorry, this is not an SEC podcast.
It is. It's an everything podcast.
It's a college football podcast.
We're trying to grow those numbers, Etta.
Yeah. And even just to expand it beyond football, well, and I mean sports in general, but, you know, you win a one team wins national championship every year. That doesn't mean the other teams weren't good. Just because one team wins a national championship every year in college basketball doesn't mean the 64 teams that made the tournament weren't good teams. It doesn't mean that the conferences they came from aren't strong basketball conferences just because they didn't win that year. And that whole premise is ridiculous. But also a ridiculous thing is any sports take from Barstool. Sorry. That's one, like, super petty thing. I hate Barstool.
That's very true. And I found myself, like, as I was reading more about her name is Casey Smith. As I was reading more about her today, She had also gotten into a fight with Jason Whitlock earlier in this year, and it is definitely me, like, sweating, looking at a button that's like, Casey Smith is wrong versus Casey Smith is right, and, like, don't know what to do right now.
It's that picture where it's, like, the person you hate the most made an excellent point.
Right, right.
It's like, oh, no.
And then, yes, speaking of people I hate the most, and I don't even hate Gary Patterson, but today he said, it really bothers me that we've based everything about whether our league is good or bad or not on whether Oklahoma and Texas are good. To be honest with you, we have a lot of good football teams, and we always have had a lot of good football teams. And I hate it when I have to agree with Gary Patterson, yes. But... I think I gave him a standing ovation in my living room today when I read that.
Dag nabbit, Gary, you are right.
No lies detected, my guy.
It's true. He is absolutely right.
So speaking of other conferences.
Yeah.
Is SMU the best team in Texas right now?
I haven't seen any SMU games since the first week, I think. So I can't speak to that.
When they almost lost to, like, Texas State, right?
Yeah. I will say I love their uniforms that say Dallas in script across the front.
Oh, they're so cute.
They're so good looking. Like, I would buy a shirt that's a mock of that.
Homefield has a really cute SMU they do line.
I have considered purchasing that shirt. So I can't speak to whether they're the best team in Texas. They might be. Who knows? They should at least get to play Texas and determine that.
That would be fun.
That would be fun.
That would be fun. If we did, like, an NCAA format, basketball tournament format.
Ooh, that would be fun. Even if they just played, football. Like, halves. So, because you can't do, like, a tournament of full football games. But, like, what if they all played quarters? They were, like, lightning games.
Right.
I could get down with that. I did see that the SMU student section got kicked out this weekend. Because they were not wearing masks and they were not maintaining social distance, and they had been warned.
Well,
how
do you wear a mask when you're doing cocaine? How?
Well,
tell me.
Considering I've never done cocaine, I'm not going to be able to help you much there. That is a valid question, though.
It's a very valid question.
That was weird. 0-for-4 on weeks where Amy and Etta don't talk about drugs. So
last week I edited it out, but I'm definitely keeping the cocaine reference in there. I saw an interesting tweet today from Brian Peroni, who cover I don't know if he's the Texas yeah he is he's the Texas A&M 24/7 site.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a quote today from Jimbo Fisher on A&M's progress since he, Jimbo, had arrived.
Okay.
And he said, one, we expect to win the game. We didn't used to expect to win this game. And I'm just wondering if Jimbo ever spent any amount of time on the internet ever before he agreed to this game. Because I can promise you, Jimbo, that Aggies think they are going to win, like, every single game. Every single game. But I feel like Johnny Manziel, like, gave them a shot of something in their arm. And from that point on, every game.
I don't know what it is. It's like this weird, we joke about it, but it's a perpetual 8-5 season, which I've actually seen a lot of jokes recently of people being like, is Bo Pelini going to go 8-5 with his defense at LSU? Which I totally get the joke. Like, I see the point you're making, but... Bo Pelini was never 8-5 at Nebraska. His worst seasons were 9-win seasons. So
I feel like Etta has turned into a hardcore Bo Pelini stan.
I'm really not.
This was the plot twist of Earth 2020 that I did not see coming ever.
You know, I'm actually not. But I like jokes that are based in fact. And this one's not based in fact. And it makes me annoyed. Like... Come on, come up with, we're better than this. We can have better jokes.
You're an intellectual. Damn it. Damn it. What else do you want to talk about? What else are we talking about tonight? We can talk shit about tonight, Etta.
Can we make fun of Dana some more?
I didn't hear whatever you just said.
Oh, I said, can we make fun of Dana some more?
Oh, bless his little baby heart. Read the funny tweet, because today is Monday, October 5th.
Yes. So today is Monday, October 5th. It is the fifth week of the college football season, and University of Houston has still not played a game. So if y'all are Houston sports fans at all, they have had a great record of firing coaches this year, including today. Bill O'Brien was fired as the head coach of the Houston Texans, and all of the Houston Texans fans everywhere rejoiced. But there is a tweet from Reddit College Football saying, Dana Holgorsen thinking, can't get fired if all of our games are canceled, which is
so wonderful. And it's, of course, that perfect
pointing at the brain. I'm having a blank on who it is.
Allegedly, they are playing Thursday night.
I will believe it when it kicks off and they are actually playing. But part of me like really hopes that they, not for the players because I want them to be able to play, but for sweet, sweet Dana, I kind of hope they don't play.
Oh, I'm there with you. Like, we are mind meld right
we
now.
We are.
I want the players to get to play. It's not even so much a Dana revenge thing because I think he's just frustrated.
Yeah.
It's the Houston fans. It is. Who have not been able to shut their pie holes for like...
They have not.
3 weeks. I just want them to be so sad.
I know. We're all just, you know, all of these fan bases are so scared to play them because they're just so amazing at football.
They're just so good. After their 4-8 year.
Yeah.
Last year. I'm definitely freaked out and very glad that we dodged that bullet.
Super worried about it.
I say. I'm so worried. As we're 1-1 going into... Oh, wait, at least we have a bye week this week and I can just fully enjoy chaos.
So, that'll be fun. Did you happen to catch what happened to our former Big 12 buddy, Mike Leach, this weekend?
Dude, he lost to Arkansas?
He did.
I didn't watch the game.
I didn't either. I just saw the headline later on. And I had seen people last week jokingly say it would be the most Mike Leach thing ever if he beat LSU and then comes out the next week and loses to Arkansas. And I was like, oh, that's hilarious, but that will never happen. Well, lo and behold, it happened, y'all.
But I heard that Mike Leach was like resetting the entire SEC and had taken them by storm. So what? Do you even know the final score? Because I don't even know the final score.
I don't know. I actually have it pulled up somewhere already.
So is the narrative now that SEC defenses are still just really, really good and that 1 week was an anomaly? Or is the narrative that Arkansas is a sleeper national championship contender? Or what?
I don't know that there has been a time, at least not in my college football aware memory, where Arkansas has been good at college football.
What were they when old boy was
Motorcycle Man
having the thing with the girl?
Were they good then?
Patrino.
I wanted to call him Pellini and I knew it wasn't right, but
when
I knew
he had
it was
his
a P name.
Motorcycle wreck.
Yeah.
And he just had like skid marks all down his face.
He had like the big old neck brace in the press conference. I feel like they were borderline good, right?
I feel like they were good with him.
I don't really remember.
What were they? I don't know.
I don't know either. But so the final score this weekend was 21-14, which seems like a pretty normal SEC score to me.
That's a very low Mike Leach score, though.
It is. That is a very low Mike Leach score. So maybe, you know, maybe Arkansas has figured out how to fix that air raid offense or defend against it. Or maybe just everybody sucks.
It's like I always say, if you need a program to figure it out and to really crack the code and come out on top, it's going to be Arkansas. I don't ever say that ever. I've never said that before in my life.
Noted this Amy sayings.
This was the first time. Oh, I've now gone on a deep dive on Bobby Petrino. He was at Western Kentucky. That's what I remembered. He was there for like 1 year.
They're the Hilltoppers, is that right?
Yeah, the Hilltoppers. Oh, Big Red. Home of Nappy Roots. There's my podcast trivia for the night. And now he's at Missouri State. Anyway, but I don't know what his record was at Arkansas. And if I cared a lot, I could go and look that up.
I have it right here.
But I don't care that
much. He had a 10-win season and an 11-win season.
Oh, so that was when he was having the affair. He had that 11-win season.
Mm-hmm.
And then went and had an affair with like a volleyball player. That was it.
Yeah.
And her husband was like an SID or something,
I think that's right. So that 11-2 season is tied for his second best season ever. He had one 12-1 season at Louisville.
It's like I always say, come to Sour Grapes for the...
the first time at Louisville, for the facts. Not the second time. So
always come here for the facts.
Yeah.
So anyway, Mike Leach, I don't know, TBD on how he's going to fare in the SEC. Because last week he was setting the world on fire, and this week he's losing to Arkansas.
I really can't think of anything, like, instantly when I think of Mike Leach, the first thing I think of is the photoshopped picture of his face on... the guy from Seinfeld, where he's, like, in the boxers, like, lounging across.
Kramer? Is it Kramer?
Nope. The guy that Jason Alexander played. I have never seen an episode George. Of Seinfeld.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
I think it's all on Hulu right now.
It probably is. I just don't really have, like, TV time. Look, it comes down to Ted Lasso or Seinfeld. Clearly, it's going to be Ted Lasso. But I picture that, or I picture him locking Craig James' son in a dark closet. Right. Those are the only two things I can think of when I think of Mike Leach.
Right, yeah. I don't think that I had a whole lot of, like, familiarity with him, even while he was in...
I know he never played college football.
I don't think I cared.
Yeah.
Who do you think had the sourest grapes of the week?
You know, I haven't been... On the Twitters. And I didn't watch any football games, really. So I'm going to go. My one personal thing I will go with is that Navy let the entire Air Force offensive line go into the end zone on a goal line stand. Like, the entire O-line made it over the line. Way to go, midshipmen. Y'all have some sour grapes for sure.
Now, what are they eating? Like, what
MREs? I don't know.
Disparity is created when that kind of penetration happens.
And the crazy thing is the Air Force only has like half their team right now because they did a lot of washbacks since it's the pandemic. And so they didn't even have, I don't even think they're like all varsity players. Navy just is really that bad.
Well, that is a strong contender. I was going to put forth Farmer Vincent from Surlyhorns.
I didn't scroll far enough, so I couldn't see it.
He said, Tom Herman is not worried about getting fired. He knows it is a certainty at this point. It's just a matter of if it's this year or next. So when you see him on the sidelines and you could swear that you care more about us losing than he does, it's because it's true. He is thinking about this just the way you or I would. He's making $5 million a year. Just ride it out as long as possible. Then move on to the next stop. 5 years from now, Texas will be no part of his universe. He thinks the fans are pathetic morons. Duck them. They didn't say duck. They said the F word. I am rich. My family is set for life. He is even getting some sick pleasure from inflicting pain on the fan base. If you want to say that that is BS, then watch the game again and look at his smug ASS on the sidelines. He pulled off a hell of a con. He had to do it once. Congratulations, Tom, you piece of
poop.
Shift. I can only hope karma slaps your ass. In the meantime, can we move on to Urban? This man, like, wrote
a diatribe.
I have chills from reading that one.
My first thought on this is that Tom Herman, do you want to come on Sour Grapes and talk with us about the pain you're inflicting on the fan base? Because we would love to have you.
I do feel like that madman would be a great guest.
My second question is, Farmer Vincent, could you tell us the difference between a scythe and a, what was the other one? Scythe and sickle. Could sickle. You please tell us the difference between a scythe and a sickle?
Which one is like the sling blade that Darrow has in Red Rising?
In my head, I was picturing it like a sickle, but I think it's actually like a scythe, and I think it's a sickle because
this has been book talk with Amy and Etta.
Because a scythe is what's on the communist flag, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we just figured it out.
No, hammer and sickle is on the communist flag.
Oh. Dang it. Farmer Vincent, we need you.
We need you. Also, Tom, I bet Tom's favorite wine is Chardonnay. What do you want to bet?
Oh, totally. He probably puts ice cubes in his red wine. I'm really sorry to anyone I just offended, but I recently, in the last maybe 18 months, became aware that some people put ice cubes in their red wine, and my mind is blown.
So I do that with white wine.
I put frozen grapes in my white wine because it doesn't water it down, and I swear I'm not an alcoholic.
I only learned like within the past 18 months that red wine should be chilled. Like not icy, but like you should have it in the fridge and then take it out.
I don't drink mine chilled, but I also pour way more than you're supposed to. So clearly I'm not doing it right.
If some things are right, I want to be wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, call your shot right now, Etta.
Okay.
Who is going to win in the Texas versus Oklahoma fight to the bottom on Saturday at 11 a.m.?
If it's a win by fighting to the bottom, does that mean who's losing or who's winning?
Who is losing, which is winning our hearts?
Oh.
Who's losing? Who's losing?
I think Texas is going to lose. I hope Texas is going to lose.
Same.
I just found out that a friend of mine who went to Texas for grad school burned their Texas shorts out of spite, and it like warms the cockles of my icy heart.
I feel like this is like one of those like burn your Nikes, self-own type thing. Like, bro, you paid money.
Oh no, they didn't pay. Well, yeah, paid money for the shorts, not paid money. Well, they were just. It was a justified burning. We'll say that.
I don't know.
It was a justified burning.
Even if I get really angry with Baylor someday, I'm probably not ever going to burn like my home field apparel sweatshirts.
That's, well, you know, you can't burn home field. That's
but it's
like
still Baylor gear.
I don't know. I'm not Catholic, so I don't know like the types of sins, but I feel like that's a bad one. Don't burn your home field gear. Also, how do you wash your home field gear? Someone asked me this week, and I was like, wait, are there specific instructions? I just wash it like my normal clothes, where I throw it all in together.
Yeah, I don't sort things according
I don't either.
To color. I just wash most everything on like cold to coldish warm water.
Yeah, same.
I did have my crew neck BU interlocking sweatshirt that I got like over a year ago. It was like right when they first released it. I do have some fading from that. From washing that one.
They
actually reached out to me and were like, hey, we have become aware that there is a fading issue with this sweatshirt. Do you want us to send you another one? And I was like, no, I actually kind of like the faded look.
My original home field bare face hoodie faded so much that you can't see the bare face. And I reached out to them and they replaced
it
for me. They did. So shout out to y'all. This is why I keep buying all your clothes
all
every week.
Freaking clothing. Oh, something that I wanted to really quickly highlight before we end this episode. So this year I am on the Baylor Bear Foundation board. This is not sponsored by them in any way, nor affiliated with them. But I think that you and I have discussed before how we think that Baylor is really kind of being the gold standard in how we handle life and sports and university life in a pandemic.
Yes.
And I know that there's a big need. There's not a huge need. We are not faring any worse than other athletic departments right now. And I think that we are faring better than a lot of them. But if you are listening to this podcast right now and you are not officially a Baylor Bear Foundation member, They are doing a campaign right now to get as many members as they possibly can. And you can join for like as little money as you want, or you could join for as much as $400 and have like preferred seating rights right now as we go into next year. So if this is something that you are interested in, friends, to help continue the Bear Foundation, which is providing scholarships to our athletes and supporting them during this time, let us know, because they're doing good work. And I really do feel like they are doing things the correct way. And I think we've been recognized this week by like a couple of external scientific agencies. I think I saw something on the Texas Tribune just even tonight about how Baylor is being proactive with its COVID testing.
Yeah.
And really, again, setting the bar, which we know that Baylor will do because we love Baylor and we trust in them to do the right thing. Closing tonight, Etta, what do you want to say?
Tell your friends about us. Smash that subscribe button. We appreciate y'all for listening to us and putting up with our shenanigans, because there are a lot of them, and we are aware. We're in therapy, we promise.
This is our therapy.
So, yeah, follow us on Twitter. We are at Sour Grapes Pod, and she is at Amy Graham Padgett, and I am at Bayloretta. And Amy is pointing at me, and I don't know what that means.
Oh, just to say, like, you are at Bayloretta.
Oh, yeah, I am. I am at Bayloretta.
And we don't always talk about politics, but when we do, it's definitely something you'll agree with and really, really appreciate.
You'll love it.
Gnarly, guys. Okay, adios.
Y'all have a good week.
What do I do now? Hit end record?